Welcome to an all-new episode of Tap Into College Golf. I'm your host, Brandi Jackson, and after 8 years of playing professional golf, unfortunately not as successfully as I would like for it to have been, I have been working in this college recruiting industry for about 13 years now, and more specifically, these last 4 or 5 years has been all about you all as female golfers out there trying to get to the next level, trying to navigate this sometimes stressful, crazy recruiting process, and just all the things that come with that and the decisions and the questions that you face, and the ultimate goal being able to mature and develop some skills both personally and professionally. They're going to help you for this transition into college golf and college life and life after college, and just so many things that you can learn from and develop and grow as you're going through this process. So instead of me harping on all the things that I think you should be doing and need to be doing, that is why I bring on the experts and the coaches and all those people in this industry that really know very specific to some of these topics and can really give you some insight on some of the things you may have questions about. So excited for an all new guest here on Tap Into College Golf. Welcome to a new episode of Tap Into College Golf. Took a little bit of a couple weeks break as many of the coaches were wrapping up their season and wanted to give them time to do that. But now it's time to kind of dive back into some good conversations with some great coaches. And we definitely have one of those here today that this is actually one of the first times we've really kind of connected despite talking and chatting back and forth. I've got two girls there playing for him right now. So we've done a lot of communication, but one of our first real conversations. So you all will get to kind of listen in on that as we chat, but excited to have Coach Thomas from Williams College here. Great D3 program that has done an outstanding job just over the last, he's been there for, I think, 6 years now. I'll make sure that's correct. Just done a great job there. And it's a great program. As I mentioned, I've got a couple of girls that are there that love it. So Coach Thomas, thanks for joining.
Thanks so much for having me. Really a pleasure. And thank you for all the great work you do for our, ladies out there.
Yes. Yes. Well, is that right? 6 years or is this a seventh year or six?
Yeah,
year?
I'm in my seventh year
okay.
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I know, you know, it has been, you know, a great 6 years so far up to this point, with just some couple runner up finishes at a national championship and some conference championships. So just kind of talk about, you know, kind of what led you into coaching. I know you're originally from Iceland and you've got a sports psychology degree, and so just kind of share a little bit of your background and getting into coaching, and then we'll kind of branch into the program and everything from there.
Absolutely. No, yeah. And it's been a fantastic 7 years now at Williams, and really enjoyed that. And I often say, like, just how fortunate I have been with my trajectory in the coaching field. I started playing golf in my home country of Iceland. I got to play for some of the national teams there and international tournaments in Europe. And then one sort of that competitive career took an end. I went to a graduate program in California in sports psychology, like you mentioned. And that was just my idea, is just to study sports psychology and work in really in the field of mental coaching, and which I have continued after I finished that degree. But started coaching a little bit of high school golf and high school soccer out in California. And then I had met my wife out there, and we moved to her home state of Minnesota, and I continued to coach both golf and soccer there, which then sort of led to my first opportunity to actually coach, be an assistant coach in women's soccer first at the college level. And I had hired myself, been hired at a different place to coach soccer, but the golf position opened up. Coach Manson Women's Golf in McAllister originally, and end up getting that job, and that sort of got my head coaching golf college coaching career going, and then after 5 years there, 4 years there, sorry, I applied for the job at Williams, that at the time when the post came in, they were defending national champions, and that was really exciting because I remember the phone interview for Williams, my older son now was 6 days old. So when I told my wife, hey, I've applied for this job at Williams, and her having been a D3 student, a student athlete herself, I was like, oh yeah, great. Sounds good. But then we had to have a more serious conversation when I was actually offered the job about moving out here. And we really haven't regretted that. It's been a great experience. Nice. For me and for us, and had really been very fortunate, both with the team I inherited and then the players that I recruited have really embraced the challenge to be a student and student athlete at Williams. So it's a fantastic journey for me, because I always say it, like, each opportunity I've been presented with, I've had the opportunity to coach and work with the players. And I would say, like, you just go into it, do the best you can, and see what that leads to.
Very cool. Yeah, that it's, like you said, definitely a great opportunity there that you got led into and fell into coming off. Like I said, they were coming off a championship win at that time. They've continued to do that. Obviously, you're there, a couple of years before COVID hit. And I know the D3 level of things got probably a little more affected that, and the Ivy Leagues were a little bit tougher, I think, on getting seasons going back up. So I'm sure that was a little bit of a struggle there. But talk about, you know, you kind of started to touch on this, but what, you know, when you wake up in the morning and, you know, what makes you excited about going to be a college coach and, you know, just really kind of gets your juices flowing?
Yeah, I mean, it's often get that question just in general about people's kind of career and where they go. And I'm really, like I said, I mean, fortunate is the word I come to often, to be able to say, like, I've never woken up in any morning as like, I don't feel like really going into work today, because it's really exciting. But it's just the same thing that makes it sort of fun as make it challenging. It's exciting and it's hard. But what we really get to, we get to be a part of the student athletes, be a small part of their development during their college time here. And we get to challenge them to really be the best they can be as a student, as a person, as a golfer, as their coach. And really, they don't necessarily always see that in the moment, but then it's the letters, the emails, the phone calls, the texts you get some years later as they're alums and they're navigating their adult lives, their careers later on, and really express their gratitude for all that we did and just the great time we were able to have together. So it was challenging, like you mentioned, sort of in the COVID times, because we didn't have as much opportunity to interact and students were sent home originally, and then a lot of things were happening remotely and whatnot, and no competition, no overnight. So we didn't have those moments like in the van, in the hotels, at the restaurants, which really, at the end of the day, no one really remembers what did you shoot and how many titles did you win. But like, it's really, what was the experience like just being together? And it's really fun that we get to be a part of that. And like I said, in some small way, get to impact and have an impact on their development during this time, because they're going through a lot, finding themselves, discovering like their identity, and it's challenging. But at the same time, I mean, they challenge me, they keep me on my toes. But that's the fun part. I have to navigate that and come up with some solutions, some answers to that.
Yeah, I love. Yeah, like you said, I think a lot of times you don't find out until years down the road or after the fact just how much of an impact you made when they realize what it did. I know my coach and I, Coach Potter, who's down in Alabama, we talk about that now. You know, you definitely don't, you know, realize what you're learning and what it's really teaching you. And, you know, you definitely don't understand it and quite appreciate it as much when you're there. And, you know, you feel like the world, like everything's so hard and so tough, and your coach, you know, has all these expectations for you and trying to, you know, tough on you and all that. You just don't quite, you know, grasp it at that time. But yeah, a lot of times that rewarding part comes more after the fact and after they're gone and get out in the real world and realize how much they really did learn and, you know, the challenges and what that really did teach them.
Yeah, for sure. And I always say, it's like, it's not that we both have to, and we get to make those decisions and those difficult decisions sometimes. And like, who gets to travel, who doesn't get to travel. It's never fun.
Yeah.
But that's part of it. And we really just make sure that that we attend to the whole person and not just try to look at them just as golfers, because they're here for a lot more than just golf.
Very true. Yeah. Well, you kind of talked about the challenges. What maybe is one of the toughest parts about being a college coach? I mean, I'm sure you kind of just said it as far as, you know, having to be the one to make those decisions, you know, and be that person. But what's some of the tougher pieces as far as being a college coach, you know, whether it's just the paperwork or it's the having to say no, you know, to recruits, or what's some of the tougher parts that you struggle with?
Yeah, you actually took one of those I was going to talk about. But I mean, I'll say just like the basic things that we work. Well, afternoons, evenings, weekends, long hours sometimes. And it's just like, oh, you get to be on the golf course. And yes, it's like sometimes when I don't get to play, I get to observe and coach five players at a time, at least, if not more. You're sort of stressed for all of them at the same time. So those days get to be long, and we work when other people normally don't work.
Yeah.
So I think that's in general, just being a college coach is challenging for those reasons. But I've often said that some of the hardest moments that I experienced, because you build up the relationships with recruits and you get to know a lot of them through the recruiting process. End of the day, we're adding two, maybe three to our roster each year. So you end up having to say no to many that you've really liked. And I would say, like, hey, it was completely up to me.
Yeah.
We would have a 40 girls roster, or like 40 player roster, and take all of you on. But that's not the option that we have. So that's really challenging. I've had quite a few conversations in the past where that's been difficult. But then again, those players, they find themselves at a good school, at a good program, and you get to see them on the golf course and get to give them a hug again as they cheer them on. Hey, great job. I'm really happy that you're doing well.
Yeah. Well, I think you made a good point. We were talking about this before we started recording. You know, you take two, maybe three girls out of 100 plus that, you know, come across the table, you know, every year. And when you really think about those numbers and those odds and the timing, you know, it's just such a, you say no more than you say yes. And, you know, it's definitely a tough part of it that, as much as, you know, you feel like the families and the players sort of see and understand that, and not saying it's in a unexpected selfish way of them, but it's hard not to feel like, you know, why can't I be one of those two? And then, you know, there is that place where you get to be one of those two or three. But when you look at it as a whole, it's just, it's so competitive, and girls golf with the academic side of things. And I said, you know, I've got two of my girls that are there at Williams. I got several at some of the really good academic schools. They're looking for that academic piece is such a big priority for so many of the girls that's where it gets so competitive. A lot of times is, you know, that just being such a big priority for the girls, which I think is an awesome thing. I think it says so much about, you know, the mentality and the discipline of the girls playing golf and their academics as well.
And that's absolutely true. And like, we go through the academic pre-read and often, like, and I'm very honest about it in the process. I mean, that's our biggest hurdle. And there have been so many girls that have reached out. I was like, I really would love to come to Williams, and I've really enjoyed being around them. I think their golf game is phenomenal. Then we get the academic pre-read in and we see their transcripts, and whatnot. And the reality is, like, it's not, they're probably not going to get into Williamson, and unlikely not. And their academic standards don't meet the standard of the college. And that's hard, because, like, and there have been quite a few that we've had in that realm that we've loved to see in our team and we know would make a great impact and then go beat us out in some other programs. But I think that's just the nature of it. And I think the sooner the players and they realize that's part of it. And we're really trying to look at the overall package, but there are limitations to it.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, that kind of touches on what I want to talk about a little bit is, you know, what is it about D3 golf and, you know, that makes it appealing to so many girls and guys, but especially I feel like a lot of the young girls tend to kind of want to look that route and just, you know, what is it that, you know, about D3 golf that offers so much and is such a good option for so many of the recruits out there?
Yeah. And I think we've discussed it before a bit, that a lot of the girls are really looking into high academic institutions. They're really looking at what kind of career am I going to have outside of golf? And I've been honest with plenty of recruits that are like, hey, if you're at that level, if you're one of the best junior golfers in the country, you're like competing with the top D1 players, like you should be looking into a top 25 Division I program. You're very likely you could be getting a D1 scholarship. And if that is like truly the route you want to go, you want to become a professional golfer, you want to take it beyond college, that's where you should be looking. But if it's professional golf is not what you're thinking, if you're really like, hey, I think after 4 years of college, I want to go into med school, I want to go work on Wall Street, I want to go to law school, I want to, like, whatever it is, then you're really thinking about, okay, where's the best academic preparation I can get? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, obviously, there's such a wide range of Division III schools, sorry, that that you can choose from. And I think it's hard to put them all in the same bucket, because just from the environment that you're going into, the academic standards that you're looking at, the location, the size, they can be anywhere from a few hundred to 10,000-15,000. And that's a big difference. And I always say that girls are looking into Williams, and it's like, really, like, think about when you visit campuses and you have a chance, you're researching it. It's like, are you like, you really want to be in a city environment, or do you want to be in a small town, a small college town? Do you want to be like at a really big school, or do you want a closer, like a smaller knit, closer knit community? So those are the factors that they really should be looking into when making these decisions. And I think Division III has been really appealing for a lot of these girls. And I mean, I can speak mostly to Williams. It's like, they want to come to a small liberal arts college where they really can get to know their faculty, their professors. They're in a close, supportive community where they know a lot of the people. I mean, Williams has 750 varsity athletes, 32 sports. So there's a lot high like sport athletic emphasis at Williams, and you're going to feel that. And they're very like supportive of one another. But it's also like, we're not going to travel as much. We're only going to compete on weekends in women's golf, because we're not allowed to miss any classes. So there's differences. Like, if your goals are to become a professional golfer, it's like, yeah, you need to be playing against the best in the country. You need to be playing a lot and practicing more than I would say you would be at a Division III school like ours. But we see it our, like, for now, we've recent alums in medical school and dental school at Wall Street. So if you're looking at that kind of career, working at labs, like, it's a perfect environment. And like, a lot of my like recent grads that I've had to opportunity to coach, and I've been writing letters of recommendations and helping them get into graduate schools or to future employees. And that's been a really fun part of the job, because we do get to know them quite well as people, and then support them on to these different careers. And for that reason, it's about a lot more than just golf.
Yeah, for sure. You make a lot of good points there, just for, like you said, one of the biggest difference. And it's not to say, not everybody that, plays professional golf has to go to a top D1 school, but you do have to, like you said, you got to play, you got to compete against some of the best, it's got to be a big priority in college for sure. If that is your route versus, ones who are looking more for the future in something outside of professional golf and where that matches up and where your expectations as a coach matches up to their expectations, as a student and an athlete. And just making sure that all lines up. And like you said, you may have some that think they want to come there, but really, when it's all said and done, it's just not the best fit, or, thinks they want to play at a D3 school and realizes it's not, a D3 school is not for them, maybe, or whatever that might be. Just so many ways of thinking about it and viewing it, for sure.
Yeah. And I also don't want to undermine. I mean, that's like you mentioned earlier, that D3 golf has become so strong, and the players here really, like, they're competitive. They really want to do well. Yeah. and they get excited. They have a chance to compete for a national title. They work hard on their game during their time here. They very focused at practices because like it's big part of their identity, big part of like what they enjoy doing. In addition to be a great student and all the other things that they do. So they really want to get the most out of their 4 years that they're here and have ambitious goals for themselves. And we've seen that recently. I mean, we had just this fall season, a couple of under par rounds in tournaments, like, so like there's just the scores have gotten so much lower. The level of play has got so much higher. And sometimes I hear this in the recruiting process, like, oh, I'm really looking at D3 schools because I want that balance. I want to really focus more on my academics. And it's like, but you realize like you really have to put a lot of time into your golf game if you want to be competitive at the top of the D3 level.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, it has gotten, I've done a couple of random numbers and done some things both for your top D2 and top D3s just to show, you know, there's maybe not the depth across the entire roster sometimes, but you've got, you know, those scoring averages and what the girls are doing. Cause again, I think some of it is, it's that mentality the girls have of wanting to be good and wanting to work hard for something and see the results. It carries over into golf, and it's just hard not to, you know, it's hard to go somewhere and not want to be, you know, be great as an individual and as a team and work hard and get better, because that's just, you know, again, that's just kind of that mentality of those girls, I feel like, and it's just up the game. And I think college women's golf, and I'm sure on the men's side as well, has just gotten so strong over these last couple of years. It's just, it's like you said, it's definitely not that higher level of D3 is not about just coming in and it being easy from a golf perspective by any means.
Absolutely.
Well, that, kind of, again, we kind of touched on some of it. I think every time we start talking, it reminds me of my next question. Like, well, we kind of talked about it, but kind of want to dive into it. So we're going to hit one or two more questions, then we're going to do a few of kind of the fun, quick questions. But what, you know, because again, you've been there several years and have definitely seen some, you know, seen the success. What do you feel like is some of the things, some of the traits that help the girls be more successful as both athletes and students? I mean, I know we talk a lot about time management as one of the first things, but you know, what are the things, some of the things and the traits that maybe you pick up on as they're going through the recruiting process that you see will maybe help them be better transition into college golf? And then when they get there, what are some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like the time management piece, and but they've gotten really used to that. I mean, they wouldn't be in a spot to be considering those top programs without it. But what I really see a lot of them have in common, like, it's that competitiveness. They're just this drive to always give it their best. And like there's a focus to it that it's also like when they're on, they're on.
Yeah.
Like when they're at golf practice, nothing else matters. Like I really have the drive to be better after this golf practice than I was before it. And it's really inspiring in a lot of ways. And like they have their ambitious goals. And like you said, it's kind of bleeds from their academic ambitions. And like they're used to getting all A's and they're really like acing all their papers. And like, and that shows also like, hey, when I go into a golf practice, when I go into a tournament, like they put a lot of pressure on themselves. But it's almost like that. I've sometimes described to some of my players, like it's that fire that you can just tell, like, there's just like that fire in them. There's like, oh, I'm not going to give away like a bogey or a double, and I'm going to fight for every par. And like, I'm going to put myself in opportunities to get birdies. And so it sometimes it's hard to pinpoint what is it really that drives that, and how do you measure those? But it's really when you have a chance to go out and see them, play and interact with them, you start to kind of feel like that drive, and that ambition.
Yeah, I think you're, like you said, it's hard to say where it comes from and what it is, but you do tend to see it, and you just kind of know when somebody has it, and when it's an internal thing and it's not necessarily externally driven or driven by their parents or anything like that, you can just tell they just want to be, you know, good and successful and reap the rewards of their hard work. And like I said, just that competitiveness of You know, again, just that work and seeing it's somewhat come to fruition and just, you know, again, maybe not necessarily always in lower golf scores, but just to see that work and see that improvement, such a big thing that you can tell when somebody just really thrives off of that.
Yeah. And it's often we get this, it's sort of the phrases of like, I'm a really hard worker.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, tell me more about that. What does that look like? How are you really showing that you're a hard worker? Because frankly, almost everyone I interact with, they're hard workers. They put a lot of time in. But I often feel like it shows also, it's like hard work, you're putting the time in, but they're really passionate. They really love it. They love putting that work in.
Yeah.
And like they go out there with smiles on their faces and like, and really like, hey, this is my happy place. And like, I love to do 20 pitches and like, see if I can hold a couple of them. And like that is what drives them. Which is really, really just fun to be around, athletes that have that mindset.
Yeah. And I think I've gotten both the, and this actually will be a great segue into the last question I do want to talk about is the parent side of things. I get a lot of parents, you know, she works really hard or she doesn't like to lose. And again, I totally get where, you know, when you see that and where you do perceive that, but yeah, part of it is, and part of what I try to figure out when, you know, as much as I can try to get to know the girls, you know, sometimes I'm limited just because that they're on the other side of the country and, you know, I just don't get to know them as well as some of the others, but just trying to figure out, again, why are you working hard? What are you working towards? What is it that, you know, are you doing it because you're supposed to, and you were told to do it, or you know, just because you feel like you should, or are you doing it because you really want to see what you get out of it? And kind of the same thing with the, you know, well, she doesn't like to lose. And I'm always like, well, nobody likes to lose, but who's willing to go work to get better and be, you know, be willing to get knocked down to get better. You know, it's easy to just not like losing, but then some people, all they, you know, their next choice is just to go find something else different versus trying to continue to challenge themselves to get better at what that is. So some of those,
I would add words. To that. I think it's really important too. That's something that we emphasize a lot at Williams is team. Like as a team, we are better than the pure sum of the individuals. And that is a big step to go from junior golf where you're focused on you as an individual and like, oh, I hate to lose. Do you hate to lose because that's just embarrassing that you hate to lose, or you just are so driven to win for the team, for your teammates, play for your school and for the players around you. And that, like, once you see that transition during college and it's been really fun to see it in our team, it's like, soon as they come to that point, it's like, now I just really want to win because I want to win for the team. I mean, in 2019, we had the individual national champion. And one of the first things he said, like, I would return this title anytime if the team would have won, if that means we could trade it out for the team win.
Yeah.
So it drives them to really want to do well for the team. And I think awesome, that's really important.
Yeah, that is. It's a big difference there. And that transition into college golf that we talk a lot about of being on a team and, you know, all that comes with that, the good and the bad for, you know, what that looks like when you are immersed in a true team, not just kind of what high school golf might've been like, or the, you know, the fun kind of team state competitions and stuff like that, but truly on a team where you have to learn to, you know, manage all these other girls and like you said, trying to individually get better and want to play well individually, but looking at it as a team and everything, it's such a weird kind of concept with golf, I feel like, versus, you know, any other sports, so much different. Golf's such a weird one that, you know, you go from junior golf into college golf. And then if you were to go play after that, then you're back to individual golf. It's a very mind kind of alternating transition that I do think a lot of people underestimate how hard that process is going to be for going into, you know, again, a team sport where there is a lot of personality, there is a lot of challenges. When you got that, you know, group of that many competitive girls, like you said, you want them to be competitive, but sometimes it can get a little intense for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so what we'll go, I want to talk a little bit on just the parent side of that process even is, you know, what can some of the parents out there do to help their daughters get through this process and get them more prepared for college golf, and just some of the advice that you see, some of the mistakes you see made, some of the things sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, it is, you know, obviously within the fact that, you know, you can only say so many things, but a chance to maybe say some of the, you know, unbiased opinions of things that you see parents maybe do, and, you know, to just kind of address some of those things that, you know, you might not be able to tell them, but you can say as like a general reference or something like that now.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. And it's, I'll start by saying is it's like, there's nothing a parent says or does that helps their daughter, like be more likely to be recruited or get into a certain school. It's more likely like what they say or do that might hurt them than actually help. And that's hard to say sometimes because they want to be really supportive and want to be helping out. And it is in many ways. And I tell parents this, it's like, I guess I hear it's like, oh, but it's totally her decision. I mean, she gets to choose where she wants to go and whatnot. It's like, end of the day, it's a family decision, especially financial aid is in play and whatnot. Yeah. It's a family decision, and I get that. And so more the parents can support their daughter is to like start handling their own things, registration to tournaments, travel, like the logistics in general. The more that the girls can handle that themselves, they will learn sort of like, hey, this is what I will need to do in college. I have to take responsibility of these things because I won't have mom and dad helping with all these things. And it's helpful to kind of start to let go a little bit and do it in steps. Start early with money and things. It's too often I see like almost that they get so eager. They want to talk. Oh, I think she's not sharing. She's being humble. She's not sharing enough about how great she is or how well she does and all those things. And like, okay, and let's support her then in doing those things. Empower her to take the initiative a lot on those things. And that's one thing. I will also say it's because the recruiting process can be so kind of competitive and challenging. It's like pick times to be like, I can be specific and like play selective like national and regional tournaments, but not too many. Like, take time to develop your game. Take time off from tournament play, from competitive play, to really develop your game. There's too much where like, oh, we're just playing and playing and playing to try to get a lower scoring average, to trying to get lower scores, a higher placement in tournaments, that the whole development part for like gets forgotten about.
Without
really going into details, I could talk about recent recruits that I've had that like I've watched them play 3-4 tournaments, didn't break 80.
Yeah.
And like still end up recruiting them because I saw they were really spending time on developing things that were important for them then to have success later on, which then we see that because that will come. Obviously, they will have to at some point show that because we can recruit just on like, oh, we think she has great potential. But we have to be able to see that they have shown something. So I think like starting early, exploring the options. It doesn't have to be like, you don't have to visit like before you go to high school to colleges and really commit freshman year, but like start to look at the options early. And I'll say last, maybe be honest and transparent in the process. Once you have started to look into a few schools and, you know, like, hey, I'm looking into smaller schools. I'm looking into bigger schools. I'm looking into city schools and whatnot. Like, I often say, like, if you're looking into Williams and then you're also looking into schools in New York City, like, those are two very, very different places. And, like, that won't be the same college experience.
Yeah.
And so be sort of honest with yourself. It's like, what kind of environment do you truly want to be in? And then also just if you really love, like, and I've said this to you before And I say this often that like just as much as the recruits, the girls want to hear from me as the coach is like, hey, I really want you to come to Williams. You're our top recruit. We think you'd be a great impact on our program. We also want to hear from the girls themselves. Like Williams is my top choice.
Yeah.
Among my top choices, not on the top 5 or 3 or whatever, but like go to the schools that the top, like go to that one. They might not be Willis, might be somewhere else. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Like we have so many schools to choose from. And I often say like, Williams is not for everyone.
Yeah,
definitely not. But for those that really think that like, this is the environment I can grow and be challenged and succeed in, like express that to the coach, be honest. And I think it's healthy both for the player, and then for the coach to hear that.
For sure. And I know we talked about a little bit, you know, that last bit you said, and, you know, try to share articles and talk about, you know, why her and not me, you know, why did she get the offer and I didn't? And one of my exact points has always been, you know, sometimes that school may have been one of your top five, but that might have been number one for another player. And even if that player might not be quite as good as you are, that coach, you know, she expressed that to that coach and, you know, you just maybe weren't there yet. You were still exploring options or whatever that might be. And it's okay. That's why we talk about this process being such a timing of things and what's meant to be will be kind of thing, because you can't just say that if you're not quite to that point yet. And it's, you know, that's okay that you're not, but somebody else might've been. But you also made the point, you know, as well, that some girls may say that, but they're not maybe quite good enough, or they don't academically qualify. And even if they really do want to come to Williams, it still may not work out on their end. So there's so many pieces of those puzzles that are, you know, kind of intangibles in a way, but yet tangibles, but that are just not known on the surface to somebody else as to why that, you know, why that plays out the way it does for one player over another. But a good one, like you said, is just, you know, when somebody really wants to be there and you're maybe on the bubble of a couple of players and you just feel that with one of them, that sometimes just puts it over the edge enough.
Yeah. And like, I think don't shy away from it. Like ask those questions, have that conversation. I mean, some of the most meaningful conversations I have is like, yeah, see you up there because of X, Y, and Z. But academics might not be strong enough. So that is going to continue to be a hurdle. And just knowing that, have other options. And it's always healthy. Have other options, have more, like have a top choice, have a second choice and be honest. Yeah. Like, and I've, this is one I've used before. Like, it's like, if Harvard is your top choice, I really want to go at Harvard. If I can get to Harvard, I'm going to go there. Mm-hmm. Great. Excellent. What's your second choice?
Yeah.
Like, well, like then they get confused. But if there's a player like, hey, really want to go to Harvard. If I can't get to Harvard, I'm going to go to Williams.
Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. And I've recruited players like that.
Yeah.
Because they've been very clear and very honest about where they're at.
Yeah.
Because it's always like there's going to be the same situations at almost all those schools. It's like they're only going to have 2 to 3 spots.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is going to be some shuffling around. And the more, I think the more you can be honest, transparent, and that's, I try to model that in the recruiting as well, trying to share as much as I have at that time. And sometimes that means like, I'm sorry, that's just, is not going to work out.
Yeah.
Either the golf game isn't good enough or the academics aren't good enough, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's tough to, he said, to try to be honest and transparent and put it out there and finding that balance of doing that without, you know, costing yourself the opportunities, but yet also not, you know, not costing yourself the opportunities by not being honest enough and by trying to like not work the system, but trying to, you know, again, not play the game, work the system, but just by trying to be more vague or, you know, not quite being willing to kind of be honest and out there with what, you know, what it is you really want. It's a balancing act for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's knock out a few of these more kind of quicker questions as we wrap it up, because we've definitely covered a lot and a lot of great insight about, you know, just the college golf in general, the D3 side of things. But let's kind of knock out a few of the kind of more fun, less serious aspects of college golf. I mean, the first one's still kind of serious, but do you have a favorite drill that you like the girls to do? You know, some teams have a specific one they always go to, others don't. Do you have one that y'all do that you like as a coach? Maybe the girls don't like it, but you like, or vice versa.
So in different times of the year, we do different drills with short game drills mainly that have end with some sort of a pressure pause. Mm-hmm. And so you go through different kind of ladders of the drills and you end up with a final putt or a final shot or a final chip. And if you get to that stage of the game, everyone else in your on the team at the practice have to stop what they're doing and come watch you make that putt. Okay. And we were pitching drill that, I mean, at first they were like, weren't really sure, like, okay, we're practicing indoors, chipping, pitching. But they really, like, now they tell me, like, at the end of the fall, now I was like, I can't wait for us to get indoors and start working on these things, because they get excited about these different games we set up. And even like, yeah, the pressure pause, it puts pressure, it's stressful a little bit, but they also know, like, hey, that's what I need, because I want to be in that moment when it matters, and I want to be able to execute. So that's always fun when we do that.
That I love that. Yeah. Like you said, anything you can do. And I know for the junior players, some of that's what I talk about, that experience when they get to college, especially when they've got a really good coach that does these things, that pressure, you're constantly kind of competing during practice. And it's hard to stage that as a junior player, especially you're out there by yourself a lot of times. But anyway, you can kind of create that. But that's one of the cool things I definitely see about college golf is that, you know, being able to put those things in settings like that during practice. It's such a big part of college golf.
It was even this fall. I mean, we were doing a similar drill in practice one day, and they were starting to run between the different stations because they got so competitive. They wanted to be the first one to finish, because it was basically, if you were the first one to finish, you got the prize, and to have some like big goods or something like that. You get to be the first one to pick out of the bag or whatnot. Awesome. So
very cool. Love that. Well, has there been a prank that the team has ever played on you that stands out?
On me? Well, sometimes my birthday tends to happen during the week of nationals, most years. So this year they woke up, this past spring, they woke up super early, and they painted our van before we woke up and got to it. So when we we're going to get the van to pull it up and pick up the team, it was all painted with different messages to me. That was really sweet. But it was one year though, our rivals here in the conference, the other purple team in our conference, Amherst, they were at the national site a few years ago with us, and they had started a prank on us. They had taped some printouts onto our van, kind of hackling a little bit, which was fun and good humor. And my team's like, okay, we need to respond in some ways. So we went to get some colors, and there was a white van, and the players, they painted black spots. So basically cow prints on the entire van.
Oh, wow.
And we called it the Moomobile. So our rivals had to drive, and we're the purple cows. But they got to drive the Moomobile around.
Oh, that's so funny.
I thought that was a pretty, pretty funny one. And some was really memorable for those experiences, traveling with the team and doing some of those things just to keep it light and fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is one of my favorite questions that I always enjoy hearing about, whether the coach does it to the players, the player to the coach, or there's been, you know, in team against team, you know, pranks and that kind of stuff. That's what makes it, again, makes those experiences, those are the things you remember, and makes it so memorable when you know, when it's all said and done, for sure.
Absolutely.
Does the team have a favorite restaurant to go eat when they're on the road?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one in particular here in Northampton in the Pioneer Valley area. We have had a few tournaments each year, almost always one in the fall and one in the spring. So we go to Joe's Cafe in Northampton. It's an Italian like pizza spaghetti place, and they have this amazing cheese garlic bread. And you can order like a whole loaf or a half a loaf. And we did a mistake one year. We actually thought we were ordering half loaves, but we got four whole loaves, which ends up actually being like eight giant garlic breads. Yeah. So we end up giving the tables around us, shared the garlic bread with everyone around us. But that's always a go-to for us. And okay. Something we really, really enjoy. And I think it started, actually, we had one of our scoring records after really just going all out at dinner one night there.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe that's a little bit of a superstition that maybe is plays into maybe that a as little well. Bit. Yeah. Do they have anything on course snack-wise that they always request or have to have?
It's a little bit different between players. I mean, some like really like their nuts, granolas, bars, but some have like no allergy. So applesauce seems to be a hit recently. Okay. Fruit snacks. But then I joke about some eats fruit snacks, but only like certain types of fruit snacks. So so like pick
those
out
are
of the bag.
Kind of picky though. Yeah, I can see yeah. that. Yeah. Is there like the worst song that the team plays when they're on the bus ride that drives you crazy or artist or anything?
Not so for me. I like,
okay.
I really was into like rap and hip hop, especially like high school, college. And I enjoy that. I feel like that whole genre of music has changed a lot. So sometimes I just like, I don't really get this. I don't get the beat, but that might be more me thing.
Yeah.
But it's been, we've actually had these conversations this fall where it's more so if I had heard a song or they had played a song particularly often on a way to a tournament. And if we didn't play well in that round,
yeah,
I request that not be played again.
Not be played.
So I have more and more superstitions around.
I'd say that, I guess. Yeah. And that is that other, my other question is, you know, any rituals or superstitions, but I guess you've listed off a couple of those already.
Yeah.
And
we have different things, definitely rituals. We have our sort of, I call the signature cows to the barn, and people are like, what is that? What does that mean? And it's really started even before my time here, that is really initiated by the players. And before every tournament round, the players do what they call cows to the barn. They get together, do kind of a chant and some finger movements together. And it's really just set like, hey, we're in this together. We're about to go into a round and let's do our best, something to really, the ritual to just tie them together. And it's been really fun. And the other one is that we've had is birdie signs on the golf course. And you both send a birdie sign, some sort of flapping your wings to a teammate, but then you also have to receive it, which can look quite goofy sometimes because we have a particular way of receiving a birdie sign that you can go, if you go all the way with it, it can look quite goofy on the golf course. And but it gets you laughing, gets you smiling. And just reminds you you're out there together, doing your best.
Nice. And then last one, is there like a least favorite word or phrase that the girls, you may hear the girls say that drives you crazy?
I think it's kind of hard to drive me crazy necessarily, but I think sometimes when we're practicing is, and this goes beyond more things. When I hear maybe a phrase like, oh, this swing didn't feel good. And it's just like, okay, like, I'm not really sure what to do with that because you're describing a technical thing with a feeling. Okay. We're trying to achieve a certain thing, but like, it's like, oh no, the ball went okay. The shot was okay. It just didn't feel good.
Okay.
And then I think it's more about your mindset going into a shot. And that's something that we've discussed, is like, as a golfer, you remember like, okay, you've had a feeling you're about to make a putt. And you just like, I know this putt is going to go in the hole.
Yeah.
I just have that feeling. I just know it. And then I ask him, what's most often happens when you have that feeling? The putt goes in.
Yeah.
And you're like, I knew it. I knew it. I just knew it was going to go in.
Yeah.
And then that's sort of like my sports psychology background has come in. And it's like, and I love just the phrase mindset because it really describes, you get to set your mind onto something. You get to decide. And wouldn't it be amazing if you went into every shot just setting your mind into like, this is going to be a good shot. I have a good feeling for this.
Yeah,
because the opposite rings true too. When you're like, I don't feel good about this shot. Something awkward standing over the ball, whatnot. What most often happens is like, you don't hit a particularly good shot. But those are the decisions you get to influence that in that moment. So can you be disciplined enough with yourself to like set your mind onto that and really have a good feeling for it so that the phrase doesn't become after the shot, I just didn't have a good feeling for that.
Oh, very like, interesting. Good perception on that.
So we try to be proactive about those things and discuss it beforehand.
Gotcha. Well, I think that, I mean, I love, like you said, the mindset and how you get to set your mind on things is a great way to look at that and a great way to kind of wrap up our conversation. You know, I definitely covered a lot and always enjoy getting the chance to chat with, you know, with you all as coaches and pick your brain and give you a chance just to kind of share your, you know, kind of your story and your journey and your approach to things. And just, you know, just it feels like sometimes such a, especially for the kids going through the process, it's just like, yeah, I feel like they a lot of times look at the college coaches as these, like, you know, I mean, obviously there is the authority figure to that by all means, but just as these like figures of like, you know, major power and everything, and just to bring a little bit of reality into, you know, how things really are. And also I think a lot of people have perceptions of what college golf looks like and trying to maybe change that, not in a negative way necessarily, but just, again, just showing what it's really like. And there are ups and downs to it, but you know, there's a lot of great reasons for doing it and working hard to find that place that really fits you for sure.
Yeah. And it's like, we're humans too. And I tell my players all the time, it's like, I make mistakes too. Sometimes I'm going to say the right thing. Sometimes I'm going to say the wrong things. And that's all part of the process. And then just understanding the more we can look at it all from that perspective of like, we're humans too. And really it comes down to, I said it earlier and I will say it often, like that honesty and transparency, and everyone's just trying to do their best. And especially, you don't go really into college athletics if you're not competitive. So you do want to win, you want to improve, you want to do the best you can. And people are trying to do that at the same time, and you're playing college golf against all those. There's only going to be one winning team, a winning player, medalist, but you really have to be proud of what you and learn from every round and every tournament, be proud of what you did.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I appreciate your time, and I know everybody out there listening in does as well. Some great insight and just lots of great info. So Coach Thomas, I appreciate you joining me again. And I appreciate everybody who hopped on to listen to this episode, and stay tuned for another one coming soon. And thanks again, Coach Thomas.
Thanks so much, Brandy. I appreciate it. And keep up the good work.